Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-argument episode of SCOTUScast, Appealability and Inter Partes Review Edition. I'm your host, Gray Scotchling. On December 9th, 2019, the U.S. Supreme Court heard argument in Thrive Incorporated v. Click-to-Call Technologies LP, a case involving a dispute over certain appeal and time restrictions applicable to inter partes review, also known here as IPR, in such proceedings before the Patent Trial and Appeal Board of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. In 2013, Ingenio, a predecessor entity to petitioner Thrive Incorporated, initiated IPR proceedings to challenge the validity of a patent held by Click-to-Call Technologies LP, known here as CTC. CTC countered that the IPR was time-barred under the one-year limit of U.S. Code 35, Section 315B, because a complaint alleging infringement of that patent had been served on Ingenio back in 2001, well over 1 year before the IPR request. The board rejected CTC's argument, reasoning that the time bar did not apply because the complaint in question had been voluntarily dismissed and was to be treated as if non-existent. Proceeding with IPR, the board then ruled various claims of the disputed patent to be unpatentable. After a complicated series of appellate proceedings, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit issued the en banc decision that formed the basis for Thrive's cert petition in this case. Citing a recent determination it had made in a similar case, the court first decided that it had jurisdiction to review the IPR time bar dispute. Title 35 of the United States Code, Section 314D, provides that a decision whether to institute an IPR shall be final and non-appealable, but the court treated that bar as inapplicable to questions of timeliness as opposed to the merits. The Federal Circuit then held that the time bar included in Section 315B was triggered by service of any complaint, even one later dismissed without prejudice. Accordingly, the court vacated the board's decision and remanded with instructions to dismiss the IPR as time barred. But the Supreme Court then granted Thrive's cert petition to address anew the key jurisdictional issue of whether U.S. Code 35, Section 314D, permits appeal of the board's decision to institute an IPR upon finding that 315B's time bar did not apply. And now, to discuss the case, we have Robert J. Rando, founder and lead counsel at the Rando Law Firm PC.
The Thrive Inc. versus Click-to-Call case is an important and interesting case for several reasons. It presents serious issues regarding the tension between congressional grant of agency autonomy and the limit on the autonomy fostered by judicial review, the scope of administrative power, the integration of individual provisions of a statute with respect to congressional intent and purpose, and the practical consequences of a ruling one way or the other. Now, before I go into the oral argument, a few general observations. The justices were very active in their questions, and it is interesting to note that they didn't appear to be as wedded to the presumption of judicial review as one might have expected, or at least as I might have expected. The arguments being made by each side can be generally characterized as either the one-year time bar is insignificant, or as the petitioner and government argue, merely a forum selection provision, or it is what it appears to be by its plain language, a statute of repose. As we will see, some of the justices seem to be amenable to the former characterization, surprisingly. Also, there is much discussion of Quozo and Sass decisions in the oral argument. Petitioner Thrive Inc. was represented by Adam Charnes. The government was represented by Jonathan Ellis, assistant to the DOGA Solicitor General, and the respondent, Click-to-Call, was represented by Daniel Geiser. Petitioner's argument. So Mr. Charnes opened up with stating that the text of the AIA, statutory history, the statute's policy goals, and the court's Quozo decision all confirmed that 314D preclude judicial review of the director's time bar determination under 315B. He then articulated why these factors support his reading of the statute. One, the provision refers to the determination to institute rather than whether there is a reasonable likelihood that petitioner would prevail in the IPR, focusing on the institution decision as a more broadly defined aspect of the preclusion of appeal subdivision of Section 314. He then points out that 314 instructs the director to, quote, determine whether to institute an inter-party review under this chapter and consider the patent owner's response in deciding whether to institute, and concludes from this that the text of the statute makes clear that the determination to institute under 314 requires consideration of the prerequisites in the entire chapter. It goes on to conclude that 314D provision that the institution determination cannot be judicially reviewed subsumes all of the prerequisites and that those prerequisites, including 315B time bar, cannot be appealed. Next argues that the statutory history supports petitioner's position, specifically referring to provisions of the chapter referring to former Section 312 into parties re-exam now appealed, repealed, where Congress limited judicial review to specific prerequisite, the substantial new question of patentability. He goes on to point out that by comparison, 314D is broader, covering the institution decision as a whole, instead of just a reasonable likelihood determination. The next argument is that the court in Quozo holding that the prerequisite of particularity was closely related to the preliminary patentability determination and the institution decision, and that 315B is closely related similarly. So under Quozo, petitioner's reading of 314D prevails. Justice Kavanaugh then pointed to the dissent in Quozo, noting that the interpretation in Quozo does not enable the agency to act outside its statutory limits, and repeated the famous, quote, shenanigans reference that may be properly reviewable in Quozo. Here is where the petitioner argument, while appearing reasonable, in my opinion, is a stretch. Petitioner's position on the shenanigans exception in Quozo first says that, well, if the board invalidates a patent on grounds that are unauthorized within the scope of an IPR, that would be a reviewable shenanigan. Okay, so far. But then the petitioner argues that 315D is not only a merits determination, but is also not what its plain language states, that it is not a statute of repose, but rather it's a limited forum selection provision. And again, in my opinion, nice try. Justice Gorsuch then jumped in with a hypothetical that a person tried to kill the patent numerous times and failed to do so. But then a director politically bent on killing patents does so even though the petition is time-barred and questions whether under the petitioner's theory it would not be a shenanigan that the court could review. Petitioner had some difficulty with responding as to whether it was a shenanigan or not, but stuck to the position that it would not be appealable and might be appropriate for mandamus relief. Justice Gorsuch then pressed on to suggest that only mandamus relief would be available in such egregious circumstances, and then went on to inquire about petitioner's understanding of the presumption of judicial review. Justice Gorsuch then referred to the earlier case oral argument concerning judicial review earlier in the day, and the separation of powers rationale that ensure people are not subject to the whimsical executive decisions. Petitioner responded by saying that separation of powers requires the court to respect Congress's withdrawal of jurisdiction to the courts, as well as implying jurisdiction where it should exist, arguing further that in this instance, being as characterized by petitioner a forum selection provision, the petitioner could challenge validity in court or the director could institute an ex parte re-exam under 303. Justice Ginsburg then referred to the SAS case decision that 314D precludes judicial review only if the board's initial determination under 314A, only of that, that there is a reasonable likelihood that the claims are unpatentable, and that the appealability preclusion of 314D is limited to the 314A initial determination. Petitioner argued that SAS was limited to the facts, only concerned with whether the merits of all challenged claims were determined in the final written decision. Justice Ginsburg asked whether petitioner thought the sentence in SAS was wrong. Petitioner said, well, not wrong, but just that the Quozo issue did not have to be addressed more broadly in the context of SAS's facts. Justice Kavanaugh then challenged the petitioner that petitioner is saying it is wrong at least as to use of the word only. Petitioner responded by saying it's not the only basis that the court explained in Quozo. Now for the government argument. Mr. Ellis, on behalf of the government, focused on the congressional purpose behind IPRs, namely to revisit issued patents, to cancel unpatentable claims, and that it is a two-step process, that is, institution and trial, and that the efficiency of agency and parties alike, that for efficiency of agency and parties alike, it provides for judicial review of the final patentability analysis and final written decision after trial. He then went on to say that respondents' characterization of 314D is inconsistent with the plain language of the provision and within the context of the chapter, the statutory history, and the court's decision in Quozo, they're therefore incorrect, and that the challenge is directed to the institution decision, which 314D deems unappealable. Chief Justice Roberts asked whether the separation of powers question posited earlier is of minor consequence, or as the Chief Justice stated, quote, small potatoes, and that in the larger scheme of things, there are various avenues to get to the heart of the matter, and that is the question of patent validity. Mr. Ellis responded that he agreed that the patentability analysis would be reviewed and could be reviewed by the director at any time. He then went on to address Justice Gorsuch's hypothetical, pointing out that there would be judicial review at the end of the process. Justice Gorsuch pointed out that the question of whether the institution was time-barred would not be reviewable and that the patent would be killed. Mr. Ellis agreed, but responded that there are other avenues available to the director that could result in killing the patent as well. Justice Gorsuch then said, there are a million things that could happen, but this is what happened, and we can't review it, right? And the patent is now killed, and there's no way to review it on the basis of its timeliness. Justice Sotomayor then asked about the situation where it is learned during the proceeding, and that would not be appealable. Mr. Ellis agreed it was not appealable, but that the board can act on newly discovered information to vacate the institution decision. Justice Alito offered that the government has a strong position with Quozo, but how does it square with the SAS decision? Mr. Ellis addressed the issue by first saying that the sentence in SAS was not wrong, but just incomplete, and that since SAS dealt with the final determination, it did not need to, nor did it, address Quozo, the Quozo issue. Justice Breyer asked how to reconcile Quozo and SAS in terms of the closely related question and whether 315B is closely related under Quozo or closely related under SAS. Mr. Ellis responded by saying it is closely related to institution. Justice Breyer then essentially asked where the dividing line, to which Mr. Ellis responded that you should apply the provision as rewritten. Justice Gorsuch then asked about the distinction between executive branch discretion to evaluate merits of claims, but traditionally statutes of limitation are clear and written in law to afford judicial rights to citizens. Mr. Ellis then reiterated his position that it's not a statute of repose, but rather a forum selection provision. Justice Gorsuch then pointed out that there is always a traditional distinction in terms of the how close governing judicial review. Justice Kavanaugh then pressed the issue of the provisions, quote, this section, close quote, language, as opposed to this chapter, which the justice suggested, if it said that, might resolve the issue. Mr. Ellis responded that the language is used interchangeably in the chapter and within the context of the statute, and that there is no basis to restrict it in such a manner. Justice Kavanaugh then asked whether it is ambiguous. Mr. Ellis responded that it is not, and it was a question addressing, and that it was a question addressing Quozo regarding whether interlocutory appeal or final written decision appeal, and that Justice Alito's dissent in Quozo said as much with respect to 315B. Justice Kagan suggested that Quozo referred to the substantive closely related rather than the timing issue. Mr. Ellis replied that elsewhere in Quozo it refers to interpretation of statutes plural related to the PTAB decision to institute the IPR. Justice Ginsburg then asked whether Quozo's characterization of the issue as a minor statutory technicality as opposed to a time bar distinguishes the case. Mr. Ellis responds that it fits into the same bucket because it doesn't actually preclude the director from reaching a final decision, and that Quozo stands for the proposition that you shouldn't throw out the board's final written decision on patentability, the major question, on a ground that's completely unrelated to the decisions like 315B is. And now for the respondent's oral argument by Mr. Geiser. Mr. Geiser started out by pointing out that petitioner's position is that Congress delegated the judicial function to an administrative agency with unfettered discretion to say what the law is, and then instructed that no Article III court at any time at any level may review the agency's interpretation of the statutory limits of its own power. Chief Justice Roberts, agreeing that the separation of powers is important and should be vigilantly guarded, question whether in this case it is of no great moment, and that there are numerous ways that the question of patentability can be achieved, and essentially buying the argument that this is a choice of forum provision. Mr. Geiser responded by saying Congress put it into the act to divide the authority between the courts and the agency and is a significant protection for patent owners. Chief Justice Roberts then reiterated that it is not a question of whether the ultimate question of patentability will be reached, just a question of one procedure or another. And then the Chief Justice said, that's not what we were fighting for at Yorktown. Mr. Geiser replied that Congress viewed it otherwise with the one-year deadline. Justice Kagan questioned whether another party could bring a new petition, and wouldn't it be silly to have it start all over again since the board found invalidity? Mr. Geiser's response was that 25% of invalidity determinations are reversed, and that Congress thought it important enough to include the time bar. Justice Ginsburg then asked whether it is unseemly to have the entire process and final determination wiped out on the merits to just start all over again with another challenger. Mr. Geiser responded that he disagreed, that in a proper proceeding, the validity can be determined, but Congress asserted as necessary that the IPR be filed within the one-year deadline. Justice Breyer then questioned whether it is merely trying to correct the mistake in the time of filing. Mr. Geiser responded that the strong presumption favoring judicial review and the construction of the statute is the guide, and that it is exceedingly rare for Congress to enact a highly reticulated scheme that restricts the agency's core authority for significant policy objectives, and then says, agency, you go figure out what those provisions mean. Justice Kagan agrees, but then questions the strict limitation of in this section. Mr. Geiser responds by saying ignoring it renders it meaningless and that Congress knows how to distinguish section from chapter. Justices Kagan and Kavanaugh then focus on whether respondents' narrow reading renders the issue meaningless. Mr. Geiser responds that he didn't think Congress looked at it as some minor statutory technicality, and then addresses Quozo and Sass, pointing out that the question of particularity in Quozo is very different from the prerequisite of the time bar in 315B. There is then discussion back and forth over the fact that ex parte reexam could accomplish the patentability determination, and Mr. Geiser clearly delineates the differences in the two proceedings, which is on the one hand adversarial in IPRs, and on the other hand, more akin to cooperative nature of the examination during prosecution. Mr. Geiser finishes by pointing out that where Congress wants to preclude Article III review, it does so with language much clearer than that which is found in 314D. I think at the end of the day, the driving issue will be the presumption of judicial review and how much the justices weigh that with respect to the determination of the statutory interpretation issues. One of the interesting issues here is that each of those provisions are pretty clear on their face, but trying to integrate them and reconcile them within the context of this question is no easy task. But again, I think ultimately it will come down to the adherence to or relinquishment of the presumption of judicial review.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.